is 80s Revisited. I'm your producer, Jesse Sedgley. And now, your host, Trey Harris.
Her courage was forged out of fire. Her power, a gift of the gods. Her destiny, to become a glorious new hero. Red Sonja. Only one man on Earth is man enough to win her.
Don't be a fool.
Try it.
To love her. To join her great adventure. Arnold Schwarzenegger is Lord Kalidor.
Kill them.
Two legends unite to destroy the Earth's greatest evil.
God, Majesty, what you want?
A woke podcast about 80s movies with an average of less than 1 minute of woke talk each episode. That's right, everybody. It's the latest and greatest blast of the past with 80s Revisited. I am your woke. And when I say it like that, there's air quotes in there. But I'm happy to be woke because I'm awake. If I was asleep, the podcast would sound like this. So thank goodness it doesn't. With me as always, the red to my Sonja, Jesse Sedgley.
Yes, I am.
That's right. Red Sonja, episode 299 of 80s Revisited. That's right. One more episode to go to the mighty 300, and we'll reveal which 80s movie will be the 300th episode of what I consider the greatest 80s movie podcast ever done by me. So there you go. But anyway, Red Sonja. Now, in case you didn't guess from the trailer, it sure as hell didn't sound like a movie about a female warrior, because it was mostly about how only one man could win this person's heart and all this kind of garbage. But anyway, we'll get to that in just a minute. But Red Sonja, which as a kid I always thought was Conan 3, released July 3rd, 1985. IMDb gives it 5.1. Rotten Tomatoes, critics, 21%, 28% audience. We'll find out where I fall on that in just a few. The budget was an astronomical $17.9 million, which for this type of movie is a pretty big budget for the time. But honestly, the sets in this movie are pretty damn good. So I think it was money well spent in that regard. It opened at 2.2 and would go on to domestically only bring in $6.9 million, thus being an official red bombja at the box office. It was directed by Richard Fleischer. Now, I must say, Richard Fleischer has directed some of my favorite movies. He did Fantastic Voyage with the lovely Raquel Welch, and one of the creepiest shots of any movie as a kid, when Donald Pleasance gets eaten by a white blood cell, always creeped me out as a kid. He did the Disney 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which has an amazing song by possible Natalie Wood rapist Kirk Douglas, and he also directed Conan the Destroyer. So he's not unfamiliar with this genre. And then it was written by Clive Exton, who did nothing else of note. George MacDonald Fraser, who wrote Octopussy in the 73 version of The Three Musketeers. And of course, Red Sonja is based on the character created by Robert E. Howard, the same gentleman who created Conan the Barbarian. And more on this, the non-cinematic Red Sonja at the end of the episode for a little edumacation there. Cinematography by Giuseppe Rotondo. He also did Baron Munchausen, Terry Gilliam film, Wolf with Jack Nicholson and the lovely Michelle Pfeiffer, and another 80s, not a classic to me because I honestly don't like the movie, but the Robin Williams titular character, the Robin Williams starring Popeye, whose set is still built where it was built for the movie, and you can go stay there because it's a very big tourist spot in Europe where it's at, wherever it was filmed. Music, however, by one of the greatest composers of cinema history, Ennio Morricone or Morricone. I've heard it pronounced both ways, so I honestly am not sure which way to pronounce it because, unfortunately, he's dead, so I can't ask
Italian.
Him.
Italian.
So, Morricone. Yeah. He, of course, The Thing, The Mission. In fact, we haven't covered that on the podcast, but I'm going to tell you right now, if you want to watch a damn good movie that most people don't know, go watch The Mission with De Niro and Jeremy Irons. An amazing movie and one of the best soundtracks in any film from the 80s or possibly all time. He also did the music for Orca, Exorcist 2. Now, again, I said classic themes, but arguably one of the greatest themes in cinema history belongs to Mr. Morricone with The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. The honest, that is the iconic Western theme, period. Name a more iconic Western theme. You can't, because it's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Also, he did the score for Hateful Eight as well, which was reminiscent of a kind of a amalgamation of his Good, Bad, and the Ugly theme with The Thing. So, which is why Hateful Eight is basically just a Western version of The Thing. And that's why it's so damn good. And yes, in my opinion, it is Tarantino's best, bottom line. And starring the lovely, at the time, Bridget Nielsen as the titular character, Red Sonja, of course, veteran of the podcast, Rocky IV, Cobra. Millennials might know her from her fling with Flavor Flav, which became like a reality. You know, they met on, I think, one of the reality shows and then had their own when they started dating. But she was a big deal in the 80s. She was statuesque. She was Amazonian, 6 foot plus, I believe. You know, model, gorgeous. And, you know, she's had her issues. You know, so, but she's still alive and kicking and, you know, doing the best. So all the best to the lovely Brigitte Nielsen. And you would think that Arnold did get top billing, which is crazy because it's called Red Sonja. But hey, you know, they wanted to get the movie to sell, which unfortunately it didn't even sell with Schwarzenegger getting top billing. But he's not Conan in this, as I thought as a kid. He's Kalidor. But of course, if you don't know who Arnold Schwarzenegger is, get the fuck out of here. And honestly, you should get the hell out of here, too. If you don't know who Ernie Reyes Jr. is in this film as Prince Tarn, that's right. He's Kino from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 and Surf Ninjas and The Last Dragon. So he's a veteran of the podcast. And he was the little dude that kicked The Rock's ass in The Rundown. But he's done a ton of stuff. He's a legit martial artist since he was a child. His father, I believe, was a stuntman with Jackie Chan, maybe. I might be getting that mixed up. But his dad was in the business, and he was too. And they're both legit martial artists. And honestly, he's great in this. He's enjoyable. He plays kind of a spoiled, rotten prince pretty good. And he knows his shit because he knows his... he's not karate. You know, that's... But whatever style that he practices, he's very, very good at.
It's all karate.
To Americans, well, oh, you know karate? Yeah. No, I study taekwondo, sir, you know, or judo, or aikido. You know, it's tons and tons of disciplines and all that. So just say, oh, yeah, you know, me, I know karate and a few other oriental words, as the 90s t-shirt that you can buy at the beach would say. With the villainous of this, Sandahl Bergman as Queen Gedrin, veteran of the podcast. She was in Conan the Barbarian, and she also starred with the late, great Rowdy Roddy Piper in Hell Comes the Frog Town. Also starring Paul Smith as Falcon, another veteran of the podcast. He was the Beast Raban in David Lynch's Dune. He also, unfortunately, was in the Robin Williams starring Popeye and Maverick with everybody's former favorite actor-director Mel Gibson. Ronald Lacey was Ikal. He was in Firefox with Eastwood, Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. He was best known as Tot from Raiders of the Lost Ark, the one who first, you know, burning is always, like, to me, the worst thing. First, he has the worst luck in Raiders. First, he burns his hand picking up the amulet in the bar. And then, of course, he gets his face melted off at the end, traumatizing an entire generation of kids. Terry Richards is Jart. He's mainly did stunts in this film, but he's also done stunts in Willow, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, the greatest Robin Hood movie in which Robin Hood does not have an English accent, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I should have just said this is a Pat Roach twofer, because Pat Roach, who was in last week's movie, is in this one as well as Breitag. And as I mentioned before, because he's been in a ton of movies that we've covered, but he's also in Raiders. He was also in Temple. He was in Last Crusade, but Indiana Jones didn't kill him in it, ending that trifecta. But he was also in Conan the Destroyer, Clash of the Titans last week, as I mentioned. But he's Breitag in this. So Red Sonja has three of the Nazis from Raiders of the Lost Ark in it. And they're all playing villains. So Red Sonja, again, as a kid, I was always under the impression that this was a third Conan movie because look at the box art, look at the poster. The biggest, what do you see? Arnold Schwarzenegger. You don't see, you know, Bridget's on there, but it's not, you know, the selling point of this was Arnold Schwarzenegger and everything. So as a kid, I don't think I ever saw it until like TBS, maybe coming on after Conan the Barbarian or after Conan the Destroyer, or maybe even after Beastmaster, most likely. Because a lot of time on weekends, TBS or TNT would have like a theme. You know, it's on now, Red Sonja, followed by Mark Singer in The Beastmaster. And then it'd play those two, and then it'd repeat them again, you know, from the 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. block. So I'd always seen the TV version of this, and I don't think I've ever seen it until I watched it for the podcast from beginning to end. Because I was watching, I was like, okay, I don't remember any of this, don't remember this. And then it got to kind of the part where they fight the machine. And I was like, okay, this is where I remember. From here on out, I was like, okay, this is where the dude gets crushed by the door. This comes in, et cetera, et cetera. So I kind of only have ever caught half of it until watching it for this. And as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, IMDb gives it a 5.1. Rotten Tomatoes, 21 critics, 28 audience. It's not that bad. It's not that good either. Don't get me wrong. But it's honestly a fun movie. It's a very lighthearted version of Conan, despite the fact that you got decapitations all over the place. And when they stab people, there is actual blood on the sword, unlike most movies, when somebody actually gets stabbed these days. But, Bridget Nielsen, she's not an actress. I mean, she is an actress. This was her first movie. But, I mean, she's not terrible. She's very kind of wooden, but it kind of fits the stoic nature of the character. Of course, Arnold's great. He's playing more of that. He's not playing Conan the Barbarian in this. He's playing Conan the Destroyer. And, of course, if you've seen both of them, you know, Conan the Barbarian's rated R, the Destroyer's PG. The Destroyer's much more kind of lighthearted and kid-friendly. And that's the kind of version of a medieval warrior that Arnold plays in this. I mean, despite the fact they're still killing people left and right, just like in both Conan movies, there's just less boobies and stuff. But honestly, I had fun watching it. Like I said, the parts that I knew, I hadn't remembered in forever. So it was like, I got a fresh wave of nostalgia from it and everything. So while this does not compare to Conan the Barbarian, Conan the Destroyer, Willow, Legend, any of the other 80s sword and I almost said Final Fantasy movies, sword and sorcery movies. It's still fun. Excalibur doesn't compare to that, but it's not bad. It is. I would agree with the IMDb rating, which I'm kind of getting ahead of my rating a bit. But you know, it's middle of the road in terms of the fantasy genre. It's not terrible, but it's not great. So it's right there. But if you haven't seen it, I think it's definitely worth seeing it just once. Like I said, the sets and the costumes are that's where the money went. You know, that and Arnold's salary. The story beats are, the core story isn't bad. It's simple. Just like any of the, you know, the old, Kurosawa samurai movies, you know, Kurosawa movies. That's an insult to Kurosawa. The Shaw Brothers movies where it's, you know, the Kung Fu movies of the 60s and 70s where it's like, you killed my master and cut my arm off. I must now learn to fight one handed and come back and kill you in the end. You know, very simple revenge tale kind of thing. But like I said, just the look of it, it's got, compared to last week's movie, Clash of the Titans, where all these tight shots where, you know, people's heads are cut off in some of the frames, you know, and you feel claustrophobic. This, you got these wide sweeping shots. It does have an epic fantasy feel to it, which obviously comes from the director, Richard Fleischer, with his history doing everything from being miniaturized inside the human body to being 20,000 leagues under the sea to Conan the Destroyer. Which the reason I honestly like the Destroyer better than Barbarian is because of how much further fetched the fantasy is in Destroyer. You know, you have the wizard in the castle with the mirrors, and he turns into the monster, and the dragon that he summons, the Taker, and all that. You know, it's just way much more fantasy in Destroyer, which is why I prefer it over Barbarian, which I know that's kind of a hot take these days. But, Red Sonja, the biggest crime of the movie is that she's not the main character of the thing. You know, it's definitely an 80s movie. If this was made today, it would actually be about Red Sonja. She would actually be the main character. Arnold, I understand why Arnold's in there. And he didn't think he was going to be the main character either, which we'll get to in the trivia in just a second. But, you know, every time Sonja's in trouble, out of nowhere, the glass smashed. And here comes Arnold. Sonja, go! I'll save you again for the fourth fucking time. Like, she can't do anything without Arnold in this movie, which is, you know, that's, first of all, that's against the character, because the I mean, at least the comic version of the character, which we'll get into later, you know, Red Sonja is supposed to be a badass. And when she has her moments in this, she is a badass as you can be in a middle of the road 80s fantasy movie. But it's always like, you know, oh no, I beat this guy, you know, I beat this evil leader. And oh no, now the henchmen are going to jump on me. I'm never going to make it. Oh, thank God Arnold show up and he can take them on all at the same time, but I can't. Why flee? You know, so that's my only complaint. Some people, of course, you know, some people who leave one star reviews that were too woke probably think that's the best part about the movie, that the man comes and saves the woman. But, you know, whatever. Anyway, Jesse, have you ever seen 1985's Red Sonja?
Only on the rental shelves. Never picked it up, though.
Gotcha. And same thing I mentioned, you know, unless you're a fan of the genre, you're not missing anything. Or if you want to be a Arnold completist to say you've seen every Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, which some of them are, believe me, he was starred in much, much worse than this. Hercules in New York, for example.
I've seen that.
Well, if you made it through that, you'll love this. This is fucking Casablanca compared to Hercules in New York. But anyway, yeah, it's if you haven't seen it, I recommend it if you're a fan of the genre. If you're a fan of fantasy films, especially the 80s ones where all the effects are practical and on set and lavish sets and costumes, you could do a whole lot worse. Don't get me wrong. You could also do a whole lot better, as I mentioned earlier when I was naming off the examples. But this movie is not as, you know, again, you have people these days are so quick to just say, oh, movie sucks, without saying why or giving any context to it. When they could, you know, it's okay to like or dislike anything, but at least be able to understand why you don't like it. That's my only pet peeve with, you know, any kind of movie review or what came out recently that was like people were, oh, Halloween Ends. That was last year. You know, I was anticipating it. I will, every time a movie comes out in the Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Scream franchise, Child's Play, whatever, I'm going to go see it. I will absolutely be there to see it. You know, but I'm going to have an opinion about it, obviously, like most people. And, you know, Halloween Ends comes out, and like, I thought it was terrible. Absolutely. I was like, really? And and the reason I didn't like it, not because of anything that it did, it's more so what it didn't. And what it didn't do, to take a tangent here, is, you know, Michael Myers at the end of Halloween Kills is killing the entire goddamn town of Haddonfield. And then this movie starts and it's like, oh, he just disappeared. And now he's weaker. He's like an old man who's weak. Made no sense. No continuity, nothing like that to like tie it. If it would have tied in better, I would not have a problem with it at all. That's my issue with Halloween Ends. That's why I don't like it. It's because you set this up at the end of Kills and now it's this. And admit to me, some people have made, you know, done some mental gymnastics to make it fit. Sorry, my opinion. Again, yours is valid too. There's not a wrong opinion when it comes to movies. human rights is another thing. Wink, wink. Woo-woo-woo. But, you know, so that's what I'm saying. Like Red Sonja, you know, is it good? In a fun way. It's a fun movie. That's the best way to put it. You know, it is a fun movie. So if you like the genre, give it a shot. Check it out. I believe it's on Amazon streaming, I believe, at least at the time of 2 weeks ago when I watched it. Here's the biggest thing that this might be one of the most important pieces of trivia in the history of this podcast. That's right. A trivia fact about Red Sonja might be the biggest thing to blow your mind that you've ever heard on this podcast. And we've had some good episodes, especially with the ones with historical background. But most people, when they think of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, now you already know where I'm going with it. They think, oh yeah, Howard the Duck was the first one. No, my friends. And I believe we did say that on this podcast when we covered Howard the Duck like 10 years ago, whenever it was. Because that's called not fact-checking things when you read them on IMDb. Which I did fact check this one because this came out before Howard the Duck. And Red Sonja is technically the first feature-length theatrical film based on a Marvel Comics character. So yeah, Phase Zero, You best be including Red Sonja before Howard the Duck, ladies and gentlemen, because Red Sonja is the first film in the MCU. Technically.
She shows up in the next movie for MCU. That will be confirmed.
Yeah. Well, the thing in the...
And I will be surprised.
The crazy thing is that, I mean, eventually the MCU is going to get to Conan, because they own Conan now, or Conan, however you want to pronounce it. However, there's Conan O'Brien and there's Conan the Barbarian. You know, it's like either one. Either one
Conan
works.
Conan O'Brien.
Yeah. But anyway... I mean, they're going to get there because they even brought Conan into the modern age of Marvel Comics. I didn't care for it. He's just the Punisher with a sword. You know, he has no business fighting with, you know, the Avengers. He's fucking Conan, you know. I mean, it was a short-lived thing, thankfully. It's just, you don't need him. I mean, you have plenty of sword-wielding heroes already. You don't need Conan the Barbarian to be in Marvel Comics, except for like a fun one-shot or something, you know. But anyway, so yeah. If you're ever on Jeopardy or you had a trivia night and they're like, what was the first film based on a Marvel Comics character? If somebody answers Howard the Duck and they get it right, you say, whoa, 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 no, I can prove this right. Tell me the release date of Howard the Duck. Oh, really? Well, what about July 3rd, 1985? Because that's when Red Sonja came out and that was the first film based on the 1973 comic from Marvel Comics. So there you go. Now, I mentioned earlier that Arnold didn't really know that he was kind of the main character in this, and that's because he signed up for what amounted to a glorified cameo as a favor to the producer, Dino De Laurentiis, but Arnold was kind of surprised when he was on the set for 4 weeks, 3 weeks longer than he expected, and he discovered after watching a rough cut of the movie that his role had been expanded to a basically co-star as opposed to cameo, because they used crafty angles and multiple cameras. And that's a big reason that he terminated his 10-year contract with Dino De Laurentiis, because he, rightfully so, felt that he was taken advantage of for this role. And Arnold actually believes this movie is one of his worst. He laughably claims that it's an excellent disciplinary tool for his children. Okay, bad not a woke alert, but a bad impression alert. I tell my kids, if they get told my bad side, they'll be forced to watch Red Sonja 10 times in a row. It must be working because none of my kids have ever given me much trouble. And that's more Hans and Franz I know than Schwarzenegger. But hey, it was fun to do. So, but Arnold, Arnie, buddy, legend, this is nowhere near your worst movie, dog.
Yeah.
Believe that. Again, top of my head, Hercules in New York, Junior, which I would watch this 10 times over Junior. Not that Junior's terrible, it's just, okay, I've seen it once, I don't ever need to see it again, it wasn't that good. You know, that's just the top of my head. So I'm trying to think of a bad action movie that he did, because all the stuff he did post-Governor was pretty decent. Oh, Terminator Genisys. There you go. That is definitely one of your bottom-of-the-barrel movies, Arnold, and the worst in the Terminator franchise, for frickin' sure. You know, so yeah, Junior, no thanks. Even Eraser's better than this, because at least, you know, he was fighting CG alligators, and that was pretty damn cool. Collateral Damage was kind of a meh. But yeah, Escape Plan was good.
It's fun to say for a while.
Yeah, for real.
His voice, everybody was doing it.
Oh, yeah, but anyway. Yeah. And actually, his character was originally intended to be Conan, but the film did not have the rights to the name. So an unofficial explanation is that Kalidor is one of Conan's, quote, traveling names, a common feature of multinational mythological and legendary heroes, such as Zeus, who's also known as Jupiter to the Greeks, or I might have that backwards. Romans are, you know, no, the Greek is Zeus, the Roman is Jupiter, I'm pretty sure. And then, of course, Gandalf, you know, in some regions he's known as Gandalf, in others he's known as Mithrander. So,
Strider and Aragorn.
There you go. See, there you go. See, so honestly, it does make sense. It can be applied, but that is something that you have to do in your head for it. You know, it's like you can say, "Oh, it is Conan," but that's his traveling name of Kalidor. So it makes sense, but it's not canon. It is Kalidor. Schwarzenegger and Brigitte Nielsen had an affair during filming, and this was right after he got together with Maria Shriver. Maria! Of course, they're separated now because he couldn't keep his hands off the maid or the housekeeper, whichever one it was. I mean, a maid is technically a housekeeper, right? And it took Dino De Laurentiis almost a year to find an actress that he quoted as Amazonian enough to play the title character. And then 8 weeks before production, he saw Brigitte Nielsen on the cover of a fashion magazine. And she was 21 years old at the time of filming this. She's from Denmark, but she was in Milan for a modeling job. And she soon found herself on a plane heading for Rome. And a successful screen test followed. And thus she got her first starring role. They also briefly considered Sigourney Weaver, which would have been fine. But I mean, you know, I don't know how that would have impacted anything in the Alien franchise, so thankfully she didn't take it. Sandel Bergman said Brigitte Nielsen was a nightmare to work with. And she was actually, Bergman at least, was initially cast as Red Sonja, but she decided to portray the queen to help avoid typecasting, which, because she was the hero, the female hero in Conan the Barbarian. Ikal, the character of the gentleman that plays Tot, from Ronald Lacey, from Raiders, you know, face melt, hand burned guy. His character is called Ikal, but spelled backwards, it's Loki. And in Nordic mythology, Loki is the god of evil and corruption, who is infamous for being a jealousy-prone troublemaker and plays a pivotal role in the end of the world, much like Ikal's character in this film. Critic Gene Siskel called the film, quote, a bad film that was unintentionally funny. It's not a comedy, but it's lighthearted. So I is it a bad movie production-wise, music-wise, direction-wise? I don't think it's bad. It's more so with the story and, you know, the act. I mean, again, Arnold is Arnold. He's not going to win an acting award, you know, even though he's tried. And he's had some good roles, don't get me wrong. But let's be honest, you know, he's not going to win a Best Actor award. I mean, is it possible? Absolutely. Plausible? No. Same thing for Brigitte Nielsen. None of these are, you know, Oscar or Shakespearean actors, much like Clash of the Titans, where you had Laurence Olivier, one of the great, considered to be one of the greatest actors of all time in it. So, you know, but is it unintentionally funny? No, I think they knew what they were going for. Because, I mean, if you look at the director's previous work with, again, Fantastic Voyage, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and Conan the Destroyer, those all have, despite that it's a very serious, like, movie or story, they all have lighthearted characters and elements to where it's, you know, not so scary until a white blood cell eats Donald Pleasance's face. You know, aside from that, it's fine. Or the little, the body. See, I don't know what it was in the body, but like try to strangle Raquel Welch. That was pretty terrifying as well. Yeah, Fantastic Voyage is pretty fucked up, man. That's got some nightmare fuel, a couple of nightmare fuel things in it. But yeah, score wise, Red Sonja, I'd give it a 5. Much like IMDb, I think that's you know. I was kind of teetering between 5 and 6 because the sets are really cool. There's some really well-designed sets in this that really bring home that fantasy aspect of it. Like, okay, this is not our world. This is a fantasy world. And the set design does a really good job of that in the movie. So if you like that kind of thing, you're in for a visual treat. But yeah, I think 5 is fair. Like I said, it's a middle-of-the-road 80s sword and sorcery movie. And it's fun. Is it a lot of fun? Your experience may vary, but I think, again, it's worth a watch for sure. And then you forget it forever until you're ranking every Arnold Schwarzenegger movie and you're like, this is not at the bottom. No way. So anyway, now again, this was based on a comic. Now, the comic was created by writer Roy Thomas and legendary comic book artist Barry Windsor Smith for Marvel in 1973. And it was inspired by, as we mentioned earlier, Robert E. Howard's character, Red Sonja, not Sonja, Sonja of Ragatino. Now, she first appears in the short story called The Shadow of the Vulture in 1934. But in that story, Red Sonja is a gunslinging warrior woman of Polish-Ukrainian origin with a grudge against the Ottoman Sultan. But Howard's Red Sonja has no connection to his other character he created, Conan the Barbarian, but Roy Thomas and Barry Windsor Smith transposed her into the Hyborian Age and changed the spelling of her name to Sonja with the J. And Shadow of the Vulture itself was adapted by Marvel as a Conan and Red Sonja story of the same title in Conan the Barbarian number 23, published in February 1973. Now, Marvel published comics featuring Red Sonja until 1986 and then returned the character for a one-shot story in 1995, and in 2005, Dynamite, or should I say Dynamite Entertainment began publishing stories of the heroine during which the original Sanja was killed and replaced by a, quote, reincarnation. So she's still in comic books today. She was been in comics since 73. So there you go. So again, the first full-length comic film feature featuring a Marvel Comics character, albeit one that most people probably didn't even know was actually a Marvel Comics character. In the real world, this released July 3rd, 1985, a mere 27 days before my brother, my baby brother, was born on July 30th. And July 30th, Schwarzenegger's birthday. July 19th, New Hampshire teacher Krista McAuliffe was excited and elated to be selected as the first person to go into space under the Teacher in Space project to ride aboard the space shuttle Challenger. Yeah. So there you go. Unfortunately. And then 2 days before this came out, French actress Léa Seydoux, you might know her from Spectre, the Bond film. She was, she's been in a lot of stuff, but mainly French films. Very beautiful, very talented actress. But I most notably know her from her starring role in the Hideo Kojima game Death Stranding, also starring Walking Dead alumni Norman Reedus, which many people think that game is just a walking simulator, but has one of the best, most meaningful and heartfelt stories of any game I've ever played, and it's criminally underrated. But it is a absolute, I understand the criticisms of it, but it is an absolute masterpiece at the end. And they're making a part two, which honestly, I really wish they wouldn't. I mean, we'll see. But that story ended so, there was such a pin in it at the end. I was like, this is perfect. No sequel, please don't make a sequel, but they're making one. But hey, we'll see. Back to the future this week. Jesse, I'm going to take a sip of my refreshing room temperature at this point beverage while you let us know what you've been seeing, watching, playing, doing, all that kind of fun stuff.
Well, I hope it's a quick sip because I haven't been doing much. Yeah, in fact, I think we talked about that a few weeks ago. I saw Everywhere, Everything, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Did we talk about that already?
No, we forgot last week.
Or did we forget? That's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay, so I did see that. Yeah, I just watched it.
So what did you think of the Oscar-winning film for Best Picture, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once?
I enjoyed it. I like that it was a smaller vision than I thought it might be. Mm. I thought it might go all crazy. You know, just judging from the trailer, I just thought it'd be all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it all takes place mostly in one building.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so I was like, I like that. They kept it kind of small. You know, it goes outside of it for various reasons, of course. But yeah, I enjoyed that. I almost gave it like an indie feel. Even though it's far from it.
Yeah. Well, the special effects were basically done by the four people who learned how to do it on YouTube. So, in a sense, very indie in that regard, at least. In that one aspect,
that is
for sure.
Wild. Because the effects in it are so good.
Absolutely.
Very much enjoyed it, though. I'll keep it spoiler-free. I liked it.
Awesome. Glad you enjoyed it. I figured you would. It's... You know, a lot of people, you know, there are some people I know, like my mom's like, oh, I think I should watch it. I said, okay, you're probably not going to like it, but if you do want to watch it, you need to watch it in one sitting and pay attention and, you know, to get the most out of it because you got to pay attention. There are certain things that otherwise you're going to get lost really quick because that's what I liked about it. It's a long movie, but it moved like bam, 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 bam. Like you had to keep up, mm-hmm. which it didn't underestimate the audience. Or insult the intelligence. There was no need to like recap stuff. It just kept moving and moving and moving. And I personally was in it the whole time, and I absolutely loved it. Not that I got it and you didn't. I'm not saying that because some people aren't going to like it, like I mentioned earlier, and that's fine if you don't like it. But it was my favorite movie last year, so barely beating Top Gun Maverick. Now I will watch Top Gun Maverick way more than I'll ever revisit Everything Everywhere All at Once. But Everything Everywhere All at mm-hmm. Once is a better movie. If that makes sense. Definitely should have won the Oscar for everything. Now, I had a choice the past week, Jesse, I must say. Week and a half, actually, because we're recording this on Thursday instead of Monday. You know, I could have watched RRR. Absolutely. I promise I'm going to get to it. But instead of watching RRR, I use that time instead to watch not one, not two, not three, but four movies instead of just RRR to talk about today. Now, of course, oh, I'm being facetious. I know it's not that long. I mean, it's long, but it's not as long as the four movies I'm about to talk about. But real quick, the new Shazam, Fury of the Gods or whatever, it's fine. It's fun. You know, if you like the first Shazam, it's the same kind of thing of Zachary Levi, however he pronounces it, if he pronounces his last name like the genes, you know, acting like a kid in a superhero body. Visually cool. Mary Marvel was hot as fuck, and that was a good thing. The cat, you know, it's fine. Everybody took it seriously. All the actors, everybody knew they were in like kind of a fun superhero movie, and the villainesses chew the scenery and all that. So it's fine. If you like superhero movies, you could do a lot worse. Because I know it's getting panned, and the director calls it unwatchable and all this stuff. But it's fine. It's not terrible. It's definitely more like a kid's movie. For sure, a kid's superhero movie, which they all technically are. But I mean, this one is definitely kind of like, you know, because you have the kids turning into superheroes, so it has that kind of feel to it. But it's fine, it's fun. And then I saw 65, which, have you heard about that one, Jesse?
No.
Okay. Unfortunately, they spoil.
Oh, never mind. I have.
They spoil it in the trailer. And then and if you haven't seen the trailer and you watch it, they then spoil it when the title screen comes up. So I'm going to spoil it. So if you want to go in blind until the title screen, which is about 10 minutes into the movie, skip ahead. We'll see you next time. But it's called 65 because Adam Driver is actually not human. He's part of an alien species from 65 million years ago that's basically doing a pitch black run, you know, transporting people to another planet when they get hit by a very infamous asteroid that crashes his ship on an unknown planet 65 million years ago called Earth. So, again, the story is great, but the plot twist should have been, like, kept sealed until halfway through the movie or something. The movie, here's the problem with the movie. Like, Adam Driver is fantastic. Like, he is the Harrison Ford of, like, the new franchise, the Star Wars franchise. And by that, I mean, like, he's the character from the movie that has gone on to, like, just be amazing in almost everything he's been in. You know, if Adam Driver's in it, that's a selling point for me. He's done comedy, he's done drama, he's done sci-fi action, obviously with Star Wars and then this. But yeah, he's basically an alien. They're human. I mean, they're obviously all humans, you know, so I guess it's also kind of saying that this is how humans got to Earth too, I guess. Right. But he's fighting dinos on Earth 65 million years ago. I thought it was a time travel thing because it's spoiled if you watch the trailer that he's a human being fighting dinos 65 million years ago. So you're kind of assuming, like, oh, he must go back in time or something. But no. So that premise to me is really cool.
This is one of those ideas I had written on my phone a long time ago.
You see, Jesse, the FBI hacked your phone and took that idea to make this movie.
It's okay. They're taking all of my, like, ideas I'm never going to move on.
Yeah, so at least they're getting done in some form or fashion.
Yeah.
But it's worth seeing. I enjoyed it, but here's the problem. Again, this could have been an amazing movie. It's an hour and a half. So it's, like, perfect. You know, perfect length for this kind of movie. It feels like it's 2 hours, though, unfortunately. So, again, this movie has so much going for it. So much, and it starts strong, but once he gets to Earth and the credits come up 10 minutes later because he sees a dino footprint, it's like 65, and it's like, million years ago a visitor crashed on a planet called Earth, dun dun dun, there's not enough him fighting dinos. This is the type of movie. Okay, once he crashes, he's like, okay, I'm the only one here, I guess I'm stuck here. But then there's one other survivor. So now, like, the company he works with, you know, would come rescue them because there is a survivor. Like, their pilots are apparently expendable. So he's like, oh, I got a survivor. I got him woke up. The only way to get off the planet to get to the rescue ship is one of the escape pods that is in the back half of the ship. So like that movie Alive, where the plane, based on the true story, where the plane hits a mountain and half the tail is like on one side of the mountain, the fuselage is on the other, and they find the tail to get supplies, blah, blah, blah. Great movie from the 90s. You should absolutely watch it. Great soundtrack too. And read up on the real story. Or wait until it's covered on 90s Revisited in 10 years. but my problem with 65 is that, okay, that's all they have to do. Him and the girl, and this is in the first, like, 20 minutes. Like, okay, we have to get over there. We have to get over, that's the whole, that's the rest of the, that's the next hour of the movie. That should be the whole story. But as they're doing this, you know, a couple of little dino encounters, but then it's like, oh, let me climb up this tree because I lost signal. He falls out of the tree and hurts himself. You know, it's all this, everything, every single possible thing that can go wrong happens, you know, and that's my problem with it. It's too much. Every stroke of bad luck happens to these two as they try to get to that escape pod. And it's so, like, that would be fine if the movie was 2 hours, I guess, and you had to fill the time. But it's an hour and a half, and it still feels long because it's just, they get 10 feet. Whoa, I slipped. Whoa, let me get you. Oh, I'm running to save you, and I fall in quicksand. I mean, that it's just like, it's, and then, like, she's a mile away, and yet she knows where he is and saves him out of it. Spoiler alert. You know? So, again, this movie, like, should have been one of the baddest-ass movies of the year. And in a lot of ways, it kind of is. I mean, again, it's worth seeing. You should absolutely see it. But I'm telling you, watching it, it's so frustrating because I'm just like watching it. Okay, he's like, we're going to camp here for the night. I'm like, that's a bad idea, bro. Everything you do, something bad's going to happen. Just go another 20 feet and then camp. Because, you know, oh, something's happening. You know, it's just, and there's, unfortunately, there's like one dino fight in the middle, a lot of running from like noises and T-Rexes, and then like, oh, we're running in this cave, but oh, there's a slide in the cave, and now we're trapped underground. I got an idea. Let's blow it up. Oh, cool. We made a tunnel. Let's crawl out. Oh, no. Random earthquake after we did this, so now we're trapped in the tunnel from the cave that we fell in sliding down running from the T-Rex. It's a Rube Goldberg machine of like A, B, C, D, E, F, G of bad things happening for no apparent reason except run, you know, just to give them something to do when they should be, it should have been tense. It should have been them like having to be quiet, having to fight all these different kind of dinos, maybe finding a friendly dino who would then come back and save them at the end or something, you know, but the actual ending is great because that's when he's actually fighting dinos. And his gun in this movie is one of the coolest sci-fi guns ever. The sound effect is like really cool. And, you know, so there's so much good in this movie. This shot right here that we're watching on the trailer, of course you can't see it, one of the best shots in the movie. And it's, of course, right there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was good. I was like watching, there's so much good in it. You know, like Star Wars, there is good in it, I see it! But it doesn't get to where it needs to be. Like, it should have been a heart-wrenching, like, it had such potential. And that's the only, and it sounds like I'm kind of beating it up a little bit, but it honestly, it is. If half of it is like such a cool, great movie, the other half is just like whataboutism of like, hey, how about while they're trying to get, they just thought of every simple idea that should thwart them from getting to the escape pod. You know, Oh, and then by the way, remember I mentioned that infamous meteor that wrecked the ship? Guess which meteor it is? Yeah, the one that killed the goddamn dinosaurs. So there's your first, you know, bad luck thing, you know. Oh, he happens to crash on this planet right before an extinction event, you know. For example, Pitch Black. The plot structure is very similar to Pitch Black. But compare Pitch Black to this, and you'll see, like, Pitch Black moves. Like, there's... That's why Pitch Black created, you know, launched the Riddick character. And to me, that was a good thing because Chronicles of Riddick, to me, is still one of the best sci-fi movies of the past 30 years at this point, I guess. You know, but in that movie, same thing. They crash, but they crash, you know, and then a couple of weeks or however long, a few days, and it's like, wait, oh, it's an eclipse. Well, the planet's going to be in darkness for like years now. Okay, that seems rather innocuous, you know, for that film. But, oh, when it gets dark, though, these flying piranha creatures come out and kill everything on the planet every time it happens. So, you know, and that's the only kind of, in Pitch Black, that was the big thing. Because once that happens and they get back to their ship, then it's like, okay, all we have to do is get to the escape pod with these fuel cells and we're out of here. But, you know, they then use their big brains and figure out how to get there with light. And then, but then the only, you know, things that happen out of the blue that stop them are like, oh, the batteries, you know, the light things we're using is dying, or somebody gets stuck, or plot twist, The character who's, sorry if you haven't seen it, but it's pretty obvious. The character you think is a boy is actually a girl, and she's on her period, so that her blood is attracting the creatures to following them the whole time. You know, which is a good, that's a fairly interesting plot twist, although you're, the whole time you're watching, like, is this a boy or a girl? I mean, it looks like a girl, but they're saying it's a boy. But they tried. They did a good job. Pitch Black is an amazing movie. 65, it should have been at that level, but again, like, I'm just every time something happens, I just hang my head like, seriously, good, geez. Like, again, like this, now this, and this, okay, and I'll tell you right now, if you watch it after me talking about it and hearing this, when they get to the end and like, they're like, we're getting out of here, you will already know exactly what's going to happen to thwart it for the next five steps before they do or do not get off the planet. Like, you'll be able to like, oh, I hope this doesn't happen because of the, like, you know, this must be this, like the computer talking, like, oh, I'm sure nothing is going to stop that from happening. And you're just like, okay. And it's just, it happens. It happens 5 seconds after you think it. Oh, yeah. I'm harping on it too long.
But, yep.
Yeah, let's get it moving. Sorry, everybody.
RRR.
Yeah. And I'd still be talking about that. And we would just do the whole podcast on RRR that week. But
you will not predict the next moves in RRR.
If I do, then that's a latent superpower to have. You know, what's the worst mutant power? To be able to accurately predict what's going to happen next in a Bollywood film. That's my luck for getting a mutant power. But anyway, yeah. So 65 again. I do recommend it. It's just, it's so one more rewrite with somebody like thinking it out, and it could have been amazing. It could have been like so good. But every aspect, the diners, it's a shame that this is 2023 and the dinosaurs don't look, you know, better than how they looked in Jurassic Park, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Way worse. Yeah. I mean, some scenes, absolutely. All the dinos in this are CG, which, okay, I understand. Again, yeah. I understand.
They just don't move with weight.
Yeah, there's no,
they
like.
They move like they're weightless.
Yeah. But again, we're seeing. But just go in with guarded expectations, so to speak. And then I did see a sequel to an 80s franchise, Creed 3, and it is the second worst Rocky movie to me. Rocky 5 being the worst. I've never liked Rocky 5. That's the only Rocky movie I've never rewatched. So maybe I should rewatch it. I should revisit it eventually. But yeah, Creed 3, the first two were amazing. And there was a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, how, like, you know, oh, they just didn't want Rocky in it. They didn't want Stallone involved in it. And you can tell that he's not involved in it. Because every previous Rocky movie he wrote or he produced, and of course his name is as producer on this, but he wasn't invited. He says himself, like, hey, it was my character, you know. It's unfortunate, like, he said it, like, his quote is something to the likeness of, like, you know, I created Rocky. It all came from me, and I don't own a penny of it. Now, I don't own one line that I wrote from that movie, any of the movies. Now, it's well acted. It's Michael B. Jordan does the directing in it. He's pretty good. You could definitely see the anime influence because he's a huge anime fan, and obviously a Fight Night 3 from Xbox fan, because there's a lot of those, like, you know, when you throw the haymakers in that game, the slow motion with the spit ring, blood, you know, coming out. Looks fantastic. It's entirely predictable. It doesn't have that rock. Not that a Creed movie, you know, I agree that it needs to move away from Rocky, but you need to give Rocky the character his ending. They kind of set it up before, like, oh, he has cancer. Maybe they're going to kill him off like they did Mickey in Rocky 3. They need to, you know, it's fine to, I'm totally on board moving away from the Rocky character for the franchise, 100%, let's do it. But you have to give that character his goodbye. You can't just not have him in it. You know, that's a disservice to the fucking legend that, you know, that is Rocky Balboa, cinematically and for the story. You know, kill off Rocky and then have Carl Weathers come back as, like, just, you know, Adonis, like, seeing his dad, wondering what his dad's thinking about it. Like, you know, oh, he's doing good, son. You know, always thought you'd say that. Not to where he's seeing a ghost, but you know how you can handle it. You know, so it just doesn't have that touch, that Rocky feel. It feels like a generic boxing movie, which is unfortunate. But again, the production level, the acting, fantastic. It's just cookie cutter, unfortunately. And I will give props to Michael B. Jordan for the surrealness that he tries to do at the end for the end fight, to do something different. Props for that, but it completely doesn't work. And that's just my opinion. How it's like their friends fighting. If you've seen the trailer, you've seen the cover of it on demand, you know exactly what's going to happen. Because it's a Rocky movie in the franchise and everything, you know. So in my opinion, they should have given Rocky his swan song in this. And then it is actually the Creed franchise from here on out, 100%, which I believe it needs to do anyway. You can't depend on Rocky for all these movies, but you have to give that character his goodbye, which Rocky Balboa did. But then Creed 1, Creed 2, so it kept going. And if you're going to have Rocky in it, you got, you know, this, we're talking one of the most beloved characters in film history, you know. So didn't have that. But again, still, you got to see it. And when I say, I don't like Rocky 5. I like Creed 3, but it is the, as far as the other ones go, it's the least best. Now, in a franchise like Rocky, to where there really isn't a stinker, in my opinion, aside from Rocky 5, that's not a bad thing. It's still a great movie, 100%, you know. And then finally, last night I watched Power Rangers, Now and Forever, the one-hour Netflix reunion, quote-unquote, thing with the original Blue and Black Ranger. Now, I'm only bringing this up because it's nostalgic. This is 90s nostalgia. Now, when Power Rangers came out, I thought it was the fucking stupidest thing I'd ever seen. I was like, what is this? It came on after X-Men on Fox. I was never a Power Rangers fan. Didn't have any of the toys. My little brother liked it, and I would pick on him for it, which, you know, in hindsight, I mean, that's what brothers, that's what siblings do. You know, but nowadays, like, when I used to have a treadmill, I would watch old Power Rangers episodes on Netflix while I ran on the treadmill. It is fun. I enjoy it more as an adult, because as a kid, there's some things you just say you don't like, because you think it's not cool to like it. Where everybody is guilty of that at some point in their life. But this one-hour special is really fucking bad. Again, I mean, I know the original Power Rangers. You know, I know, you know, all that. The original group. Because I watched it a few times because it came on right after X-Men came on at 10 a.m. Central Time. Power Rangers came on at 10:30. And usually after X-Men, after I kind of like, okay, Power Rangers is just Voltron, but not as cool. I'm going outside to play. That was me. A lot of people really like it, which, hey, that's awesome. You know, there are too many gatekeeping people when it comes to like what people should like and what they shouldn't like, you know, which is absolutely ridiculous. Anyway, this special is just, the Zords at the end are all CG and it looks terrible. The acting is incredibly bad, but hey, it's not like the bar was ever set high for anything involving Power Rangers. Don't get me wrong. But the nostalgia of it is pretty great, because it does feel like an episode of the TV show with a little bit bigger budget, shot in HD. The acting is terrible. And if you know any of the history of Power Rangers, unfortunately, I know I'm going to mispronounce her name, but the original actress who played the Yellow Ranger, Trini, her name was I'm going to mispronounce it. Tri-Thang or something like that. Again, apologies. But she died tragically like in the early 2000s in a car crash. The first thing this show does is kill her off. Like immediately. Which, it just felt kind of wrong. But then her daughter like becomes the Yellow Ranger, which you could, the second it happens, you're like, oh, and then, actually, I don't want to spoil any of the goofy bad writing and bad directing in this, because it's laughably enjoyable. So it's bad, but as a 43-year-old person, I enjoy watching the old Power Rangers shows. It's just fun. It's absolute fun. I appreciate it so much more now than I did as a kid. But this show is bad. This movie is bad. But it's bad in the way that the show was back then, if that makes sense. So get a couple of drinks and take a shot every time something makes you laugh and you're going to have a great time. But it's bad. And then, of course, Jason David Frank passed away last year and he was supposed to be in this, but he just said, surprisingly enough, he didn't want to do it, which is, but apparently this was kind of as he was going through some of the problems that unfortunately eventually led to committing suicide, which, again, if you know somebody with any kind of thought like that, you know, there is, I think it's 311 is now the new national line. Anybody that has any kind of thoughts about that. So very serious thing, should never be made fun of. But, you know, he actually didn't want to do it, which is surprising because that was kind of his thing, you know, was to be, you know, in the Power Rangers movie. You know, that was always his thing. He was always the Green Ranger at Comic-Con in New Orleans. Every time he was there, he would do photo ops as the Green Ranger. But, I mean, of course, you want, you know, there are some things that you're always going to be known for, but I can, you know, obviously understand wanting to move on. And I saw you trying to look it up. Maybe it's not 311, but there's some new, there's the suicide prevention hotline is now like a shorter number. So I guess, let's clarify it, Jesse, just in case. I don't want to give out the wrong information. 988. Wow, I was way off. Jeez. I was thinking
Here's three random numbers for you.
I was thinking I thought that they made it similar to 911, but different, which they did. And I thought it was still the 1-1, but it's the 9 they kept. So that's me explaining how my brain's wires get disconnected and reconnected and make me say things that are incredibly incorrect. But anyway, the Power Rangers Down Forever special, it's an hour long. It's hilarious. It's so bad, it's good. And if you're a Power Rangers fan, you're going to love it. They do a sweet thing at the end showing, like, you know, because, of course, Tri-Thang, I think it's Thang. I can't remember how to pronounce it. But Trini and Jason. No, Jason's the Red Ranger. What was Jason's David Frank's character? Was he Jason? What was his name in Power Rangers?
Anthony? I think he was. There's so many people listed in the cast. It's like I got to dig through.
I'm just trying to remember because I can hear Kimberly Jo Johnson shouting.
It's Tommy.
Tommy. Yeah. Tommy. Yeah, so, you know, because Tom, you know, you have two other characters who are no longer with us, unfortunately, for, you know, neither of them from natural causes, unfortunately. So they do, the ending is very sweet. You know, it's one of those like, oh, man, you know, they do a good job of that. But the movie itself is really kind of, you know, honestly, I really can't, I'm not saying this is a bad thing. It's just like the show in the 90s. Like, so here's the thing. Was that intentional? I don't think so. You know, put it to you that way. But anyway, that's all I saw. And again, I could have watched all of that or watched half of RRR. But again, I'm completely joking. Believe me, I want to watch it. I will get it done. And in fact, you know what? Well, actually, no, I still got to watch next week's movie first. I'm going to do my best to watch RRR for our 300th episode. But speaking of that, in just a second, email us with your quotes, comments, anything you want to know, questions, all that kind of fun stuff. 80sRevisited@gmail.com, on Facebook, 80s Revisited Podcast, on Instagram, which I don't think I've posted there in a long, long time. 80s_Revisited, possibly soon on TikTok.
It's on TikTok now.
Yeah, well, there you go. It is. So
at 80s Revisited on TikTok.
There you go. Boom. In fact, you know what? I'm going to add that to my notes. Right now, live. We're doing it live, to quote a disgraced news channel who got a $1 billion lawsuit. I'm rounding up. Don't use that as your ad hominem attack that, oh, it's not a billion. It's 757 million. Yeah, bro. God, I was way off. Anyway, 80s Revisited. I can't type on this angle. Revisited on TikTok. Motherfucker. And then, of course, our friends all across the world, Cajun Toy Review, our friend John Lafayette, and, of course, Doom Slayer and TCW almost had the win recently at TCW Rebirth, but that damn Dominique Knight distracted him. But you know what? I'm calling it now. Doom Slayer is going to get his revenge the next time him and Dominique meet, and he's going to snatch the title. Mark my words. If not, I'm not going to do anything but pout about it. So there you go. Leave a review if you'd like. We don't mind 5. We don't mind 1. We don't mind any of the numbers. We just ask if you are going to leave a bad review. Let us know what we're doing right. Let us know what we're doing wrong. And again, if you want to say some bullshit in your review, just remember this is an audio podcast that you're reviewing, and we can easily refute and debunk any false claim that you make on the following episode after the review is posted. So if you do leave a bad review, be sure to listen to the next episode to hear our comments on it. Especially when your review says, never going to listen again because the hosts are too woke, blah, 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 blah. Or whatever reason it is. But I know you're going to listen again because you want to hear what we're going to say. Because I do the same damn thing. Anyway, next week, episode 300. This is a podcast. And you know, we have to go big for 300. We have to do something huge. And there is no bigger thing to do than the only other 80s Godzilla movie, 1989's Godzilla versus Biollante. We did Godzilla 1985 a while back. So I figured, you know what, for episode 300, let's finish off the Godzilla franchise as far as the 80s go, because this is when they start getting really, really awesome. Because, you know, of course, you got the 80s practical effects coming in and influencing the Godzilla movies, which Godzilla movies always had practical effects. But man, it's the Showa, I think this is the Heisei era of Godzilla. I could be mistaken. I'll have it corrected next week if I am, of Godzilla. Because you have the Showa era is the first kind of era. And you have the Heisei era. And this is where it gets like, just, you know, if you thought it was batshit crazy at the end of the Showa era, it gets even crazier, but cooler, and just, it's so, like, these are some of my favorite ones, starting with this era, especially in Godzilla in the 90s, which we'll get to on 90s Revisited in 10 years, as the joke goes. But yeah, the last Godzilla movie of the 80s, 1989's Godzilla versus Biollante. It's going to be hard to find if you haven't seen it. You might have to resort to YouTube, or you might have to call Captain Jack Sparrow. Or you might have to go on eBay and get an imported DVD with subtitles. The Criterion Collection, they did the big, huge Godzilla collection for the Showa era. But that ends with the 70s films, to where before 1985, and which was the American title. And then, of course, all that beyond that. So I'm still waiting eagerly every day for the announcement of the new Criterion set of the next Godzilla era, because their set for the Showa era is incredible. One of the best DVD sets I ever had. And it's legitimately large. Just like Godzilla, it's the biggest size DVD set. It's like an art book size. Really, really cool. But yeah, if you're a Godzilla fan, we'll see you next week. And if you're just there for the biting social commentary, we will also see you next week. And
by the way, you can watch this movie on archive.org.
Oh, perfect.
Just search it. Yep.
Hey, everybody, clap right now. Unless you're driving. Thank you, Jesse. Honestly, that's a genius place to look, because there's been lost media or certain hard to find things that I've gone there to find. Never even thought, you know, for a movie that we might be able to find for this podcast at least. And I should have, but you did first.
Yeah.
All credit to Jesse. No, excellent. And it's on there with the subtitles. So there you go. You just got to watch it from archive.org. Godzilla versus Biollante. Biollante. 1989. And we'll see you next week, as we are under threat of another kaiju battle. The second one King Kong. Yeah, I mean, is he really a kaiju? Like, you know, in that classification, no, I wouldn't say he's a kaiju. He's King Kong. He's King fucking Kong. But the king of all monsters, returns next week on 80s Revisited for our 300th episode, and possibly a review of RRR from me and Jesse, who's seen it like a year ago.
Yeah.
So we'll see. As long as I can fit it in. Like, I still got to watch Godzilla. So I will do my best. Probably watch Godzilla tonight, and then that'll give me 6 days to watch RRR. Which, again, it's just more, honestly, I'll tell you right now, with these other movies that came out, I just wanted to see them more than RRR. Yeah. 65, Shazam, and Creed. So, but again, I'm going to do my best. But until next time, everybody, I remain Trey Harris.
Jesse Sedgley.
Cowabunga!